Thanks for listening to the Best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
It is Memorial Day. A day of remembrance, a day of honor, a day to remember what makes this country great, and hopefully what's going to make it great is sanity taking over and these nonsensical lockdowns coming to an end everywhere. Yeah, that's right. Said it right off the top of the show. We are coming to you live from the Geico Outkick Studios. Although we're apart these days, I'm tired of reading that because hopefully that is not going to be applicable for very much longer. We are sharing more. Geico sharing more too with the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for both current and new customers that last your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for info and eligibility. This is the Outkick the Coverage radio program on this Memorial Day in 2020. Clay Travis out today and tomorrow. I'm in, along with Jeff Schwartz, who played in the NFL for 8 years. He will be joining us here momentarily. The crew out in Los Angeles in full effect. DG's got some time off as well. WR Bros here with me in the Music City where we're doing this from. You can find me on Twitter at JMartRadio. You can reach this program, and we will take your phone calls over the next 3 hours and over the next 2 days at 877-99 on Fox. That's 877-996-6369. We've got some interesting news, to say the least, about the NBA. And we've got plenty of football stories. We've got an interesting story about Michigan and the Big Ten and how it seems like their approach to what's going to happen in the fall with college football vastly different than what you're hearing from the SEC, for example. Jeff is with us now. But before we get into some of the meat of this, we need to have a little bit of fun here, and I think that was what was accomplished yesterday with the match. And even if it's not like the top story, because it's a unique kind of once-in-a-lifetime kind of event, even though now maybe based on the reception, you might see it happen again to some degree. They raised a ton of money. But I think the key here, Jeff, is that even though we seem to be getting to the tail end of this craziness and this nonsense, we are still dealing with a difficult year. You know, there have been some big-time deaths. There have been some, you know, fires in Australia, for example. You've got COVID-19. You've got the economy coming crashing down, over 38 million unemployed. You got all of this. So then you bring out four guys that just have some fun. And you have a broadcast with TNT, with Brian Anderson, and certainly with Charles Barkley and Justin Thomas, who did a very nice job as well. They just went out there and did this upright. Like, this was fun. And I think that it gave me even more hope for a point that I made on Fox Sports Radio on my show yesterday about Tom Brady's documentary and how I think people are slamming this prematurely and maybe need to slow their roll a little bit, because this Tom Brady seemed to, even though he's an uber competitor, he's still with a lot of smiles, having a lot of fun. Maybe not mugging the same way that Peyton Manning would, but this guy seems to be out of the bubble. The argument that I didn't understand, Jeff, about the documentary is that this is going to be dull because Tom Brady's never said anything. I said, yeah, well, that changed when he went on Howard Stern.
Yes.
And he talked for 2 hours about everything and showed a level of vulnerability and humility and just humanity that you had not seen from him publicly. And it seems to me like this dude is too smart, since his production company is associated with it, that he's going to do 9 hours if he has nothing to say. This sounds to me like he has a lot to say, and he understands that there's a benefit to him finally being in a position where he doesn't have to play this Patriot way game anymore. Maybe he actually has a lot that he wants to show people out of this. And I think yesterday was a good step in. I don't think you would have seen Tom Brady do this 5 years ago, for example.
Well, good morning. Glad to be here with you as usual. Thank you to all the listeners tuning in. I 100% I'm with you that I don't think he does this while he's a Patriot, for sure. I mean, even if he's on the Patriots this year, I don't think he does an event like this. The Howard Stern interview, I've listened to clips. I haven't listened to the whole 2 hours. But yes, he was more open than he's ever been. And Howard Stern does obviously a fantastic job of pulling people into saying things they might not want to say regularly. And obviously there's, you know, Tom Brady's very calculated, so he has a plan on how he's going to attack the Howard Stern interview. But even then, I think he said some things that he wasn't quite sure. But the reason why I'm looking forward to the documentary is there really is a lot of mystery surrounding the Patriots and Bill Belichick, right? They want you to feel this way about the team. There's mystery, there's intrigue, how they do things, how do players respond. And there's also, there's Spygate, there's Deflategate, there's other little things that happened while Brady was there that I hope he gets into. If he does not discuss Deflategate, especially, Spygate's not really on him, but Deflategate, if he doesn't discuss that, I'll be disappointed. If he doesn't discuss the last 4 or 5 years when it seemed like there was some animosity between him and Belichick and Robert Kraft, I'll be disappointed. If he doesn't discuss basically getting rid of Jimmy Garoppolo, which is all the reports, I'll be disappointed. So I wonder how much he gets into those things, where Jordan pretty much did, right? Jordan talked about the gambling. You know, you may or may not believe his pizza flu gate story, but he talked about it at least. Him and Tim Grover were on the same page. The more I think about that, the more I think it's ridiculous. So I don't think anyone poisoned his pizza, but it just seems like he was probably gambling in Wendover, Utah, which is the rumor, than he was actually eating a pizza and throwing up. We got truth from Jordan. I think with Brady, there's these certain things he's got to hit. And it's obviously going to be his production company, so it's going to make him look good. But he's got to speak at least honestly about those topics, I think, to make this really worth us sitting down and watching for 9 hours.
I just, and we can get more into the documentary. I feel like Tom Brady, it's not that he necessarily wants to be this guy all the time, but he's had to be buttoned up because that's just the way it's done there. You just don't have, it's not that you haven't had personalities there you've wanted to hear from and personalities that have wanted to get out and say stuff. It's just not the way it's done. Now that he's out of there, he can go to Tampa Bay, and if he wants to be in the limelight a little bit more, or if he wants to show more of his personality, or if he wants to expand that vulnerability, or absolutely talk about Spygate, talk about Deflategate, talk about these things, then that's absolutely fine. Now, what you've heard so far is, the 9 Super Bowl appearances, 9 hours, they're going to devote all the time to that. Now, nobody cares to see them win 9 Super Bowls again, I don't think. This is different than The Last Dance, not in that Tom Brady and Michael Jordan are absolutely synonymous in terms of team sport athletes that have had ultimate success on the greatest stage, in terms of how many championships that they've won and how driven they seem to be to continually win them, even though the numbers that they've already won are, astronomical. So there's something to be said there, but Jordan was pretty much universally beloved and honored for an entire generation worth of people that are now old enough to be able to consume this and want to hear these stories and really be able to understand everything that maybe they saw. I mean, I watched Jordan's entire career as a kid and a teenager, and now I can go back and I remember all this stuff, and that's absolutely fantastic. When you think about Brady, though, I think it's just a lot of people are down on this just because he's not beloved outside, at least as a Patriot, and maybe that's about to soften, but he was not beloved when he was in New England because you were either a Patriots fan or you wanted to see him lose. And you watched to see them lose, and the ratings dictated that you wanted to see them lose. But that, it's not like Jordan and Brady are the same guy, even if they are wired a lot of the same way. I think that's one of the big things. It's just people hate the Patriots. They still hate the Patriots. So the idea of watching a 9-hour documentary about that isn't quite the same as watching the Jordan-era Bulls and hearing stories of something that was, look, nostalgia always feels better, especially way down the line. And it's been so long that it was just fun to jump into the Wayback Machine for 20 years and see what happened here.
Yes, some of the nostalgia stuff got a little aggressive on social media with the Jordan doc. Look, it was obviously a fantastic doc, but I didn't think it was either anywhere close to the best sports talk I've ever seen.
No, that would be the O.J. Simpson documentary.
And I understand people made the comment that that's more of a true crime doc, which is fair enough. It still was like 15 times better than Georgia. I thought there were some 30 for 30s. I didn't watch the Lance last night, but
yeah.
Just like the two Escobars. I mean, it was a story that like I didn't know existed, and it was told fantastically, and I learned maybe more in that 2 hours I did about Jordan in 10 episodes. So I just think we got way over the top of the nostalgia. It was fantastic. I enjoyed it. Don't get me wrong. And it was, like I said, it was great, but we got over the top. I think with Brady, you're right that people don't like him, but people will watch us out of spite, right? And they'll look for instances to bash Tom Brady. Even yesterday, when you watch Tom and Peyton Manning, you know, Tom is the guy who you can even tell he was a little uncomfortable to start. He didn't play very well, obviously.
Right.
He kept his mouth kind of quiet. And then when things were going well, obviously, we got more personality from him. And so I'm curious to see in the doc what we get from him as far as personality, because obviously he has it, but you know, he only kind of showed it yesterday when things were going well. Peyton Manning the entire time was roasting him, bad, good, indifferent. Like Manning feels more comfortable in his skin. I think Brady, I'm interested to see how much he opens up and gives his personality. Because one thing I do appreciate about Jordan in the doc is that Jordan did not care what we thought about him.
He
was going to be who he was to his core. He had plenty of opportunities, Jason, to apologize for anything, for getting on Scotty Burrell, for punching Kerr, for riding his teammates, for anything, for gambling, for anything, for golfing before contests, for knocking Jerry Krause for 15 years, for mocking his height. He had all those opportunities to say, look, I shouldn't have been that guy. I shouldn't have done this. I shouldn't have. And he's like, nah, that's just who I am. You know, I'm competitive. I push people. So I wonder how Brady will, because I don't see Brady as the personality who is. That's why the Howard Stern thing was interesting, because I think he did open up. It's like someone who kind of naturally is going to exude like confidence and be very talkative and informative in this setting. I'm curious to see how he does it, but I could see it being very,
I think there's intrigue in that. I hope not. Like, it does not need to feel like a victory lap. I think that's what Frank Schwab of Yahoo said. People feared this is going to be a victory lap because some believed that's what the last dance was for Michael Jordan. I looked at it differently. I don't think the last dance was a documentary. I think that's where Ken Burns was wrong, where he was like, this is not journalism. Well, I mean, he was right to say that because, right, it wasn't journalism. This was a story. And it definitely came from a perspective, but it involved almost all of the parties that you would have wanted to hear from. But the main thing was Jordan's production company was tied into it. So it probably wasn't going to be as negative. It's like, you're either going to have one extreme or the other. You're either going to have one that's going to paint a little bit more of a rosy portrait of Jordan, or you're going to get a hit piece. It's coming from an agenda either way. Every documentary or every story in some way, if it's based on truth, is coming from the agenda of the person telling that story. In this case, I wanted to hear from Jordan because a lot of this stuff I hadn't heard from his mouth before. I wanted to hear what he was thinking when he was going through various things and all of this. And maybe the same thing is going to be true of Tom Brady. I do worry about the trend of long-form series like this where the subject, the key central figure in this entire series, is also behind the production as well. Because that does call into question the legitimacy or just how much. I would rather there be a balance here, but I can understand this as well. I just think Tom Brady and the people around him are too smart to put him out there for a 9-hour documentary if he doesn't have anything to say and it's going to harm his legacy and he's going to end up boring. Because just as I've always said about Netflix, all these series, many of the Netflix originals did themselves not favors by thinking we have to go 12 episodes an hour long, every one. When you don't, the key of Netflix is you can make your own rules. You can say, you know what, this season we got 9 really good episodes, I think. One of them needs to be, half of them probably need to be around 45 minutes. The other half we can get closer to an hour, and let's make the finale an hour 5. But actually, episode 3, 37 minutes, but let's make it really good. You can make your own rules. It's not like Brady had to do 9 hours. Like, right. If he doesn't have 9 hours of content, why in the world would you put somebody out there that's not going to be entertaining for 9 hours? I feel like this is going to end up being good for Tom Brady because people are going to go into it feeling like they want to hate it, and then Brady's going to say some stuff, and it's going to be way more newsworthy than The Last Dance just because Brady's the guy that's never said anything outside of that Stern interview. I mean, the most noteworthy thing that he's ever said are things he didn't say, like having a MAGA hat in his locker room, you know, during the 2016 election run-up. Like, that's the kind of stuff. Brady had – there's so much untapped stuff here. That, to me, is why this could be entertaining.
But I have a lot. I have a lot of friends who dislike him. Like my podcast producer is like a Jets fan. He despises Tom Brady. I don't think there's anything that Tom can say or do in this new doc where he will say, you know what, I kind of like the guy a little bit. Like I think there are people out there that just dislike Tom in a way where nothing he's going to say or do will make them change their minds or will. You know, and they will pick apart everything that he does in this doc. Unlike Jordan, we're pretty much beloved, right? Where anything that Jordan did, and you know, obviously we got word that there might be some episodes that don't look great for him and turn out obviously to be the opposite because we learned that his basically PR people put that out. I think that's true though. I think that there are some people that will just not like it because they just don't like Tom Brady, and that's the risk of doing this, but they're going to watch anyways, which is all that, in the end, I think Brady's people care about.
Yeah, and look, I don't know that Brady feels like he needs to be beloved anyway. I think all of us have some level of a desire that we do want people to see us in good lights, but, I mean, Brady, there's a real weird thing out there in our culture where we seem to care more about the opinions of those that hate us going in. Like if you don't like me, if you don't like what I believe, if you don't like what I stand for, whatever like that, then I can't really care that much about it long term because maybe that's not going to change, especially if you look like in the political arena. If you disagree with me politically, then I probably shouldn't care whether or not you agree with me politically. It's the same thing as that quote that I've mentioned, I think, when we have actually hosted this show before, which is why in the world would you take criticism from someone you wouldn't take advice from? So as long as Tom Brady is just true to himself, I'm going to watch this. Like, I have a hard time believing it's going to be dull. I just don't know why you would do a 9-hour documentary if you actually felt like you weren't going to be able to make this compelling. I feel like it's going to be compelling. Although going into Spygate and Deflategate, I'll believe that when I see it.
Yeah. The last thing on this is I do wonder if he does walk a fine line between, you know, because obviously he has much love for Robert Kraft and Bill Belichick and how much he's willing to really go into behind the scenes information about the franchise while Belichick is still there, right? I could see this definitely being something where he reveals intimate details about preparation for the Super Bowl for each year, you know, obviously talking about, I don't think we ever heard him talk about the losses to Foles and to Eli Manning, which Peyton Manning yesterday did a great job of making sure that he knew about.
Yeah.
And like Jordan has no, he doesn't care if he throws anyone under the bus. His legacy's set. He's won the championships. He's 50 plus years old. He has his Jordan brand. Like that's like he's set, right? He's now an owner of a franchise. Tom's still playing. And I feel like Tom is much closer to Belichick and Brady, Belichick and Kraft than Jordan was with Jerry Krause, obviously, and Reinsdorf.
Right.
And so I do wonder how much Brady's going to have to walk that line between like, hey, look, I still want to come back to Gillette and come back to Boston. And I'm still very friendly, I would imagine, with Robert Kraft. Now, Belichick, I'm not quite sure. I think Belichick is going to root for him to succeed in Tampa. But while he's still playing, it's going to be tough, I think, to get complete honest answers and transparency in some of these things because he doesn't want to, and rightfully so, throw people that he likes and cares for in a franchise under the bus.
Yeah, well, it's also just the idea that, I mean, Garoppolo's still playing. What's he going to say there? They're both still in the same league. at the same time. It's the same argument of John Gruden never saying anything negative about anybody the entire time he was on Monday Night Football, because he desperately wanted to get back into the NFL. Like, he didn't want to burn any bridges. He didn't want to say anything. He wanted to end up back on the sidelines, which is exactly what has happened. So I think I have one more take about the doc. When we come back, we'll talk about that, and then we'll shift into a little bit more of the match, bring in the crew, see what they thought, if they watched, which a lot of us certainly did yesterday. The entertainment value certainly off the charts. Thank goodness the rain decided to go away. At one point, you're just like, how 2020 is it that this event that's been set up and everybody is really interested in just sitting down and enjoying this, here's a rain delay. And at one point, it was like, hey, I don't know when they're going to get this thing started. But luckily, it only lasted about 45 minutes.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Welcome back. Outkick the Coverage, Fox Sports Radio. Jason Martin, Jeff Schwartz in for Clay. He's back on Wednesday. We're in for the next two mornings. Hope you enjoy this Memorial Day. We were talking during the break, Jeff. Humid down there in Charlotte where you are. Humid where I am here today. I told you I'm going for a run as soon as the show's over, because by 10 a.m. it's supposed to be 86 and feel like 91, which means by 10 a.m. I'm going to be in the cut, trying to finish National Treasure 2, Book of Secrets on Disney Plus.
Yesterday we were outside about 8:30 in the morning playing with the kids, and dude, it was. I looked up the humidity at 8 a.m. was like 92%, and the dew point was I think 68 degrees. Which
we had it 73 yesterday here. Oh, the dew point, nasty.
And this is something very specific to me, and I know no one's going to feel sorry for me, but my neighbors have had a 150-year-old oak tree in their yard, and it shaded our driveway, especially in the morning. I mean, this thing was giant, right? Well, it fell down on Thursday or Wednesday night. I forget when it was. So our new sun dynamic in our yard is much different now, and it was beating down yesterday. So I can't really put another oak in my neighbor's yard, but I kind of want to do it. I'm curious to see how this is going to unfold. This dude, Jason, this thing is huge. It measured at over 125 feet, and they have to take it out with a crane.
You got Pan's Labyrinth next to you down there in Charlotte right now,
dude. This thing is huge. So yeah, it was hot, but look, the hot though, at least this weekend, you know, feels like, you know, we're getting towards the summer, right? Which it's very hot, obviously, where we both live. And to me, that always means that we're getting close to football. And so I'll take a little bit of heat. My son, though, thinks it's the first day of summer, and he refuses to be corrected on that. So, because I think my nanny told him it's the unofficial day of summer is today. And so now he just thinks it's official, and he just argues. We argue nonstop, but like, Alex, it's June 21st, but nope, it's today. I'm telling you. I'm like, okay, buddy, we're not arguing with a 5-year-old about this. It's whatever. He's obsessed that today's the first day of summer.
So I want to make one more point real quick about the documentary, and then we'll talk about the match. Yeah. It is interesting that Brady's doing this before his career comes to an end. And we talked about the potential limitations of content that come with while you're still in the league. There's certain things you won't say that maybe you will otherwise. The one thing I would want to hear him talk about outside the obvious things you mentioned in the first segment would be just how true was that Seth Wickersham article that came out a few years ago, and what's he willing to say about some of the stories that were mentioned there about the relationship between Kraft and certainly with Belichick and him and the Garoppolo story and all of that. And I don't know how much of that you get, but the other thing I was thinking about was all this is going to do is reinforce to everybody, not that we need it, but Tom Brady can't become more famous in terms of a football player and all this kind of stuff. All this is going to do is reinforce that he's the quarterback of the New England Patriots. It's not going to do anything about where he's currently at. It's not going to do anything but remind us of what Tom Brady always will be. Yeah, we know Michael Jordan played for the Wizards. You know how much time was spent in The Last Dance? I don't even think the Wizards were mentioned once. Like, not even just a passing mention.
I don't think they were at all either.
So this is Brady, while he is playing for the Buccaneers, doing 9 hours about his time winning with the Patriots. And I personally don't believe the Bucs are going to win a Super Bowl with him as quarterback. Not because they can't. It's hard to win a Super Bowl. There's a lot of really good teams.
In the NFL, though, it doesn't work out that way where, like, you can create the quote-unquote dream team. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
In the NBA, it does. But the NFL, for some reason, like, doing what the Bucs are doing, and I agree with you that I think they have a good chance to win. I don't know if they will win, but it doesn't often happen like it's supposed to in the NFL, right? Like, I mean, last year, the Chiefs, and they'll admit to you, they kind of got a lot of breaks, right? They you know, the Week 17 Dolphins win, you know, the Ravens losing the title. Like, they got a couple things to go their way. The NFL is just weird like that. And so I'm with you. I think it's people assume the Bucs are going to win, but I think it's going to be tougher than they think.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're going to be demonstrably better. I mean, no question about that. And they will be heard from. I just think ultimately it's really hard to win in this league, especially when you look at the talent at the quarterback spot. I mean, Jeff, there's only two Lamar Jacksons out there. There's Lamar Jackson and the bigger Lamar Jackson, Taysom Hill.
I'm spending this on my podcast today. Jeff works smarter than you. We're spending time on this. I think. I haven't got the rundown yet, but we talked about this weekend. I do not understand. I cannot remember another player in any sport that's talked about with such reverence as Taysom Hill is. Taysom Hill is a 30-year-old utility player who played 22% of his team snaps last year. He passed the ball in his career 13 times, all right? Last year, when Drew Brees got injured, they put in Teddy Bridgewater. And in that period of time, in five games, Taysom Hill attempted one pass. Now, you can make the argument, and this is a valid one, and I know no one's made this except me. It's kind of a devil's advocate. Hey,
well, I'm glad you find out that I'm glad that you believe your argument is valid.
No, that's a good start. This exact point I'm going to make.
Okay.
Because everyone will say, yeah, he didn't play very much when Teddy Bridgewater went out. And I'll just say that I could see the Saints saying, hey, look, he actually is the backup quarterback now. We can't get him hurt, so we can't play him very much when Bridgewater's in the game. Like, that's actually valid. And I know people have said he didn't play very much, and that could be why. But nonetheless, again, they brought in Jameis Winston to be the backup. Like, he's not even
Absolutely.
The backup quarterback.
Now they can use him in riskier situations because they can afford to do so.
So I don't understand why we talk about him like this. I just don't get it. It's such a weird phenomenon. We want him to be something he's not. And I don't think these were Jay Glazer's words. I think the Saints told him this. But the Saints are and I don't get why they're doing this. I don't get why it's so meaningful to them to keep putting out this information about how good Taysom Hill is. Like, nobody cares.
Are they trying to create value for a move? Or this to me reeks of the insecurity that they know he's not. Like, I don't know why you don't have to. Methinks thou doth protest too much. Like, there's no reason to continually tell us how great Taysom Hill is.
Right.
Let him be your secret weapon and just roll him out there and win games. Like, you don't need to spend ad space for billboards all across the country to tell us how great Taysom Hill is. That's the same thing as Michael Jordan spending an entire documentary trying to remind us how great he is. Like, we needed it. Like, I'm glad he did it because I'm glad it's there, but I think it does belie a little bit of insecurity in Jordan that he still needs us to know it.
Well, Jordan definitely does. I don't get the Saints' motivation for it. Yeah, Jordan, dude, that's just who he is, man. And again, I appreciate the non-apologies and just kind of believing
me
who
too.
He is and going with it. But yeah, that's the Taysom Hill thing, man. That's never going to die. It doesn't matter how long he plays. You know, he'll be 37 years old and he'll have attempted 17 passes in his life, and people will talk about him like he's Steve Young. It's ridiculous.
I mean, the quote that we were referencing, whether or not it was Glazer's quote or he got it from the Saints and put it in this mailbag article, no smokescreen, he's the guy. Sean Payton loves him. I think Sean was always hoping to unleash him on the league without anyone seeing him before, but now we've seen it with Lamar Jackson. He's a bigger Lamar Jackson. One, no. Two, no. Like, the part about this quote that stands out to me is I think Sean was always hoping to unleash him on the league without anyone seeing him before. Well, they never shut up about him. So how in the world can you unleash him when we've heard? It's like you've hyped up the movie for 6 months and then you want it to sneak out because you put it out a week before whatever's on the poster? Like, it doesn't make any sense. You should use him as a secret weapon. Do all that stuff, but you don't need to continually run this down our throats about how great he is.
But, you know, but people,
one, he's not.
People already,
two, he's not.
You know, people already have weapons like Taysom Hill on their team. Like, it's not like this is something that we've never seen in the NFL before, right? Oh, hey, look, someone's coming into the game who is a quarterback that can do multiple things. They can run the ball. They can pass the ball. Like, it's not new to the NFL, right? There was a clip last week floating around Twitter of Ronnie Brown and the Dolphins running the Wildcat in 2008. Like, this is not new to the NFL. Yeah, he's a gadget player for you. He's very valuable in special teams, which he is, and, you know, and sparingly on offense. But it's not new. And the trouble I always have with these situations, and even I think Troy Aikman even mentioned this during the telecast when the Saints played the Vikings in the wild card round. He said, I don't like taking the ball to Drew Brees' hands on third down. Now, Taysom Hill completed a 50-yard pass on that play, but his sentiment is right. Like, I don't like, if I was running a team, I don't think I'd like to have the ball out of Drew Brees' hand in important situations and give it to someone else.
Yes.
We don't see that happen on other teams. You know, are the Chiefs taking the ball out of Pat Mahomes' hands on third down? They've done it like once and put Travis Kelce in the backfield against the Patriots and he scored a touchdown. Like, they do it every now and then, maybe once or twice, but never on a big third down. Do the Patriots ever take the ball out of Tom Brady's hand? Never. So I don't get like the idea of taking the ball out of your quarterback's hand to give it to someone else who is just not as talented. But it's worked sort of for them. I don't get the fascination with Taysom Hill. It's mind blowing to me, man.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes you can accuse, I think, Sean Payton of just overthinking stuff. Like, I think he wants everybody to think he's the smartest guy in the room, and Taysom Hill gives him the opportunity to play around and try to play mad genius, which sometimes works out and sometimes ends up blowing up your laboratory.
Yeah.
Do we have Brian Finley? Is that who's in the update studio today? I'm saying that because if we did, all right, B.
Hey,
all right,
hey.
So I talked to you about the red versus blue shows thing on the Jason Martin show a few weeks ago.
Sure.
About the stuff that you use for your escapes, okay? And you're in here and you're talking about adjectives. And Jeff hasn't heard this, so I wanted to bring it out right now. Like, you know, you watch The Office, Jeff, with your wife for an escape and things like that. Brian, what is it that you get down with when you just need to escape into something purely entertaining, something that you can always just rewatch and have on in the background of your life?
Just having the Saving Private Ryan scene where you're heading to the beach.
Wait, is this a joke?
No! His escape is Saving Private Ryan, and what's the other one, Brian? What's the most opposite thing you could possibly have from Saving Private Ryan?
Lego Movie.
There it is.
I enjoy the Lego movies.
Lego Saving Private Ryan would be his dream film.
Yes. So like when we settle down for bed, and my wife is a little anxious, she has some anxiety, and like it's she's working in the morning or something, and there's a big day at work, and I'm like, okay, babe, let's watch The Office. It's 25 minutes. You know, you just can, you don't have to think, right? Just mindless humor. You can watch it. You're in the office. So in your situation, you would put on Saving Private Ryan.
Yes.
Yeah. And you would put the beach scene on. Not like, I don't even know when you would put on like a scene that was like not as violent as that.
Yeah.
Well, see, this explains.
I mean, maybe the end where he, but then Tom Hanks died.
No.
Spoiler alert, he dies.
No, Jeff, there's no place where you put on Saving Private Ryan as an escape. But I said this explains where Finley's like dark adjectives and vocabulary come from that he does in his sports updates. If my man is sitting at home escaping on a regular basis to Saving Private Ryan.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
So, top 50 all-time grossing movies. Jeff looked on Wikipedia during the break, said he's seen 23 of those 50 films.
Is that good or bad?
I don't know, because a lot of movies that made, or there are a handful of movies that made a ton of money that aren't any good.
I mean, like I haven't seen the new Lion King movie that's seventh. I mean, like, I've seen the original, which is actually down here at the bottom at 49, which is pretty incredible that they're on the same list. Yeah, I mean, some of these I've seen, like I said, I'm not like, you know, the Harry Potter thing has never been my thing. I've, you know, Star Wars, like, it's just some of this stuff I've just never been interested in.
Okay,
Lord of the Rings.
So So during the second hour, we were going through this list of the top 50 from 50 to 1 in terms of money made on opening weekend, Memorial Day weekend releases. This year, not like any other year, of course, but always a huge, it's kind of the start of the summer movie season. So a lot of big time films have come out. We have gone through 41 of them,
yes.
And Jeff has seen 13 and a half right now. I had said I thought he would have seen 17 to 20. I don't feel good about that. So let's finish up the list. Number 9 in 2004, The Day After Tomorrow. My guess is you did see this.
Yeah, I've seen it. It's been on so much on TV and stuff. I've seen it multiple times.
Number 8, 1997, the sequel to Jurassic Park, The Lost World, made $90.1 million. I think maybe you didn't see this, but I'll say you did.
I have not. I've seen the original Jurassic Park, and I've seen the Chris Pratt Jurassic Parks. I haven't seen the ones in between.
Okay, gotcha. Number 7, Solo, A Star Wars Story, in 2018, made $103 million. Wasn't very good. I would say you did not watch that.
You'd be very accurate on that, yes.
Number 6, I already know you have seen. It was the second Hangover film, because you said you saw all three of them.
I did see all three of them. This one, not very good.
No.
The Star Wars thing, man, it's like never, like, I everyone tells me I should watch them. I just haven't. I've seen the first, I told you, it's in the original 3, 4, 5, and 6, but I haven't. Everyone's, they're good, right? I should watch them?
I mean, 1, 2, and 3, you can take or leave some of them. I didn't like The Phantom Menace, but the other two were both just fine. In terms of the new ones, Force Awakens was great. Last Jedi is not very beloved at all, and I thought The Rise of Skywalker was average at best. I didn't give it too high a mark. So you've seen the ones that you absolutely have to see. I think you need to watch The Mandalorian if you have Disney Plus, because that was a fantastic show that was better than anything not named The Force Awakens that has come out since probably Return of the Jedi.
I'll take a peek at that. I have a long list of things to watch. Ooh, I got to prioritize some of this.
Yeah, well, I need to get you a list together. Number 5, 2014, X-Men Days of Future Past. No way you saw that.
That would be correct.
Number 4, Fast and Furious 6. I love this franchise. Once it changed, really, at Fast 5 and became like Ocean's 11 with cars and more increasingly ludicrous by the film, it just got better and better. But I bet you didn't see the 6th Fast and Furious film.
I don't think I've seen any Fast and Furious after the original.
Well, then you haven't seen it when it got good. Not that the first film was awful, but it's way different than people. People assume things about that franchise and have not seen it and don't realize how much fun those movies actually are.
I have to watch more movies. Okay, I have a long list of movies to watch that I don't have time to watch, but I'll get
all
on
right.
It.
Number 3, 2006, X-Men The Last Stand. No way.
I don't think I've seen this. No.
Third X-Men film. It was terrible. Number 2, I know you haven't seen, because now you realize that this, I think, is what you're actually going to start watching pretty soon. This was the 2008 reboot, not reboot, but fourth film in the Indiana Jones series, the one I told you I'd rather get COVID-19 than watch again, Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
Yeah, that'd be a no for me.
And number 1, Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End, the third film, 2007, the last one I saw, because after I saw this, the thing was so long and bloated, I was just like, okay, we're done here. Made $139.8 million. You've already given up the ghost on this one because you saw all of the Pirates films,
yeah.
You said, so you saw this.
I have seen it, but I couldn't tell you, after like the first one or two, what the plots were for any of them. Like, I've seen all of them, but like, to your point, kind of long and like, boring, convoluted. I've seen them, but I couldn't tell you the plot of which one was like two, or which one was like the third, the fourth, the fifth one. There's like five of them, right?
Yeah, the first two were good. I like the first two.
I couldn't tell you which ones were which, but I know I've seen them, which is a great way to describe maybe the last three movies of the series.
Yeah, so the list of 50 concludes, and Jeff hits 16 and a half of those 50 films, leaving 33 and a half that he has not seen, including the likes of Back to the Future 3, which is problematic.
Or Back to the Future 1. I've never seen the first one.
Yeah, you didn't even need to admit to that one. Like, that needs to really be at the first. Like I said, that's a perfect script. That's That shouldn't be allowed in a free society. Like, you should have freedom, but you should not have the freedom not to watch Back to the Future.
To skip Back to the Future?
Yeah.
I'll get on it as best I can.
So tell me, you know, we kind of beat around the bush, but we ended up talking more about the Tom Brady documentary than anything else. What was your general feeling about the match yesterday? I just felt like it was a fun escape that worked for what it needed to be once they got on the course for a myriad of different reasons, but mainly it wasn't a bunch of guys taking things too seriously, but there was enough competitiveness that I enjoyed it more than, say, the Pro Bowl.
I think it was authentic, which I think was important right now, right? We had authentic emotional reactions to what was happening. We had the trash talking, obviously, which was fantastic. We had, you know, I really enjoyed, like, Phil Mickelson, the intimate details explaining what shots he was doing, and then doing the exact thing that he said he was going to do, which was pretty incredible. We had two Hall of Fame quarterbacks, Jason, who we've seen in big moments of their careers have no problem stepping up and making plays. And they get on the golf course like all of us do, get up to the first tee box. Do you golf at all, Jason?
Golf is something I absolutely love. It's not something that I can do. I haven't been successful at it in the past. I'm actually planning on I may not be able to do it this summer because of the restrictions, the nonsense that's going on in the country. But I would say at some point... Well, I mean, taking lessons is what I'm saying. Oh, okay, not just getting out there by myself. I mean, okay. I actually want instruction to do it right.
You know, it's like all of us. So, like, the first, I haven't played golf in quite a while because with my back, I don't play as much as I should. But, you know, like, you get up to the first tee and you're like, man, I'm going to smash this ball, right? I'm going to start off my round the way I want to go. And of course, it never goes that way, right? You get too emotional. You freak out. You swing too fast or whatever it is. And you just whiff, right? The ball goes left or right. That's the exact same thing Tom Brady and Peyton Manning did. They're on national television. They played in Super Bowls. They played in big. They played each other, right? They bought a national. Peyton Manning hosted SNL, right? Like, he's done big, important things where the camera is on him. And the camera was on both these guys who we've never seen really have moments of weakness like this. And they shank both their tee shots off the first tee. Like, it's exactly what the normal golfer does, what the average weekend warrior who shows up at the golf course does. And that, to me, felt very relatable. I appreciated how relatable their games were. Now, Tom Brady holding out from 200 yards, that's not relatable to most of us. But it was fun to see them. And obviously, the competition at the end was really great. Because the first nine holes, you know, Tiger and Manning, Tiger looked great, by the way, the entire day. But, you know, it wasn't really close. And Phil kind of inched back in that modified best ball format. And so I liked that it was authentic, and I liked that I was able from 3 yesterday Eastern to about 8 o'clock, just watch live sports and be part of the community on social media. I know that you're not big into social media as I am now, but just like we didn't have politics talk on social media. We didn't have any talk about the coronavirus for 5 hours. It just was like everyone was back watching a sporting event together. And yes, it wasn't a major sporting event, but it was something. And then they raised $20 million plus, which was obviously very important. So I like how they brought in, you know, Brooks Koepka, you know, Russell Wilson, 300,000 meals he donated in the span of 3 golf shots, which I don't think that they had any idea was happening. I don't think that the players on the course knew. So that, I just liked it. It was fun to have an escape for a little bit from reality.
It felt... Yeah, well, it was an escape from reality, but at the same time, it felt very real in the human ways that you mentioned. But also, like you're saying, the guys donating money and making bets on what's going to happen and stuff like that, that's the kind of thing you expect to see on a Saturday afternoon at your local muni.
Yeah.
You know, with 4 or 5 dudes pounding some Natty Lights or whatever like that and just going through the golf course. Like, this is... Nobody wanted to see Tom Brady and Peyton Manning go out there and light up a golf course. They wanted to see the golf course light up Peyton Manning and Tom Brady. One of the reasons I've always loved the U.S. Open, it's my right there with the Masters, is my favorite 2 events in really all of sports to just sit down and watch, is because it humanizes even the pros. It's the one time that they look like us. They look like the regular person. Peyton Manning and Tom Brady are so elite in what they generally do for a living. And Peyton Manning has proven to be you know, great in all of the things that he's tried to do since leaving, and people are still trying to get him into the broadcast booth. We don't know what Tom Brady's second act is going to look like because he's not ready to give up his first act, as we're going to see him as a quarterback of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But we know is this was not surprising that they weren't great on the golf course, but that's what you wanted to see. You wanted to see how they would react. We knew they were going to be competitive about this, but I think you mentioned about how it got competitive in the end. This reminded me of the good version of the NBA All-Star game, where it's all fun and games and showboating around and all sorts of stuff for 2.5, 3 quarters, and then they end up going there and playing some defense and trying to win the game. Like, it's not going to be remembered as some great all-time competition, but that wasn't the point. The point was to be entertaining, to raise some money, and to do something out of the box. And I think this bridges us a little bit to the discussion about what the NBA is going to do or not do, and when, and what their timetable is, and all of this, and what the NHL seems to be wanting to do with the 2014 playoff and all of that. This is an unprecedented time globally, but certainly in the country. Regardless of where you fall on the issue, whether you think the lockdowns were necessary for a short time, were never necessary, or should be happening right now, and if you're one of those people, I don't know how, but when you really stop and think about it, the more out of the box, this is unique. So I think you should be doing unique things because times are unlike anything we've ever seen before. So when I was thinking about the NBA and what they could potentially try and do, Jeff, I said on the Jason Martin Show yesterday here on FSR that this thing just needs to be a tournament. Like, they need to, I would expand the playoffs a little bit and create a bracket, because the longtime lament for non-hardcore hoop heads that watch the NBA is that the regular season doesn't mean anything, because even if the Clippers and Lakers are playing in November, you know they're going to be playing in a longer series later in the year, so why do I care what they're doing in the regular season? This gives you an opportunity, if you're the NBA, to just cancel culture the regular season, basically. Come back and put everybody into this tournament, seeded based on what they've already done. But what I don't understand is, not that I don't understand it, I just don't understand the idea that some people think you can just start this season again. It's going to have been, based on what we're hearing, the end of July, it's been 4 months, Jeff. Like, this ain't the same year. Yeah. Like, I think you got to give that up and say, that goes with an asterisk in the books, where you're just like, this season ended on March the 11th, which is when the last game was played, when the season was officially canceled due to the COVID-19 2020 pandemic and the hysteria and everything else that went around that. And you can go through and you can tell that as part of the history. This is an opportunity to do something different. And so if you create a tournament atmosphere that still ends in crowning a champion, I just think we'd be down for it. Like, if you did this and expanded it out a little bit, you could do whatever you want to do in terms of bringing the league back. But if you don't want to watch the regular season, then now you have the opportunity not to even worry about that, to move into the playoffs. And I'm not saying you put all the teams in. Yeah. I'm just saying maybe add another round and maybe even do 2 out of 3. And then I think the fascinating point about this, Jeff, is we don't know how any of these teams are going to look coming off this much time off. And we especially don't know how, like, a LeBron James at his age is going to be able to, is he going to be able to turn on the Jets immediately? Is it going to take him some time? Is it teams that have cohesion, that haven't had nearly as much turnover, where guys have been playing together for a handful of years? Are they going to have the advantage? Or do we have the chance for parity in the NBA in terms of upsets that you generally don't get in the playoffs just because of the strangeness of everything that's happening?
Well, there's lots to get to in what you said. I have a couple of questions before I get to the kind of individual comments at the end. So it would be a tournament. So you would wipe out, you basically, like, the regular season had no champion. Like, the 2019-2020 season does not have a champion. We're going to do this alternate tournament to end our season. Is the winner of that considered the NBA champion, or is it like a separate title they've won?
I think you'd still give the trophy out, and you could call them the champion. It's, I mean, you can't just do something complete. I just think that
you don't come back and play games like you're trying to seed. I think you what has happened now has been the prologue to, look, we've seen the more tournaments they've added to March Madness, or the more spots that they've added when they've gone from 32 to 64 to 68, people are still watching it and they love it. You do water it down, and I've always been a proponent that, look, if you're not one of the 68 best teams, you have, like, if you're sitting on the bubble, that's on you. Like, you should be able to do more than that, or you're probably not going to win a championship either way. But people love tournaments. They love brackets. They love all of this. And when the NBA postseason comes around, people love playoff basketball. Yeah. So just go ahead and marry us to that. Bring us back. If you're going to come back at the end of July, which sounds crazy to me, that's going to take that long, but we can get more into that. But just do it. Do it that way to where everybody cares from day one, as opposed to trying to play a couple of weeks of the regular season or whatever. I don't know how you shake the rust off. Maybe you don't. Maybe you just let it start, because everybody has to shake off the same kind of rust because nobody's played in 4 months.
Well, I don't think you could start anything like that right away. I think you'd have to bring back the teams and sort of get into some sort of scrimmage situation or playing 5 to 6 games to kind of get your legs back. I do believe that veterans like LeBron James will actually handle the situation better than younger players. You know, LeBron probably doesn't need the ramp up time that young players need to kind of get back in the flow of things. He's done this for so long now, and this time off has been very helpful for his legs and for his body, and he could probably ramp this thing up quickly. He has trainers. He's been working out. You know, some of these young players don't have the opportunity to go to the gym or have their personal gym at their house, I would imagine, have their trainers, have their boys come over and work out. I think LeBron will be fine in this situation, but it is a matter of, for just the, I think, Jason, the safety of the players and their health, not health, not related to the to coronavirus, but just their bodies. You have to have some sort of acclimation period where you run sort of full speed for 5 games, 6 games, however long you want to say. Because if you just bring back a playoff right away and you say, hey, Lakers are playing the Kings, I don't know where that's actual factual with where they're seated, you know, and guys are going to get hurt going full speed game one without having any sort of ramp up period.
Yeah, no, I agree with, it has to be a safe situation. I would say 5 games, maybe max. And then that gives some of the lower seeds a chance to potentially make it into my version of something expanded. I think 24 is possible, but maybe you don't expand it and you leave it at 8-8. I don't know. I just think the faster you can get to a bracket situation, the better. Especially if you're going to come back at the end of July, because if you're coming back at the end of July, if you're the NBA, you're about to run into an awful problem known as the NFL and college football.
Yeah.
We want to see all of this, but football's going to have our attention like it always does when it comes back.
I think there's a lot of people that are going to be in the media very surprised when, you know, Thursday night football and it's Chiefs Texans goes up against, you know, the NBA and the ratings difference in those games. And, you know, a Thursday night football last year, I looked it up, Thursday night football averaged about 15.5 million per night. And Thursday night football typically are not the best matchups, right? And the NBA finals last year average, if you include the Canadian audience, which obviously the Raptors were part of it and won last year, was 20 million. That's for the NBA finals. This is a random Thursday night football game. And the amount of people that watch the NFL is so enormous. I don't think the NBA realizes what they're up against. And so I just don't, you know, the ramp up period, I get it, but I don't know why it's still 60 days away. I you know, we have college campuses for athletes are opening up like this. What's today? June 25th. Like, they're open up next week. If college kids can go back and start training at their facilities, and it's going to be a period where, you know, they bring the kids back safely and slowly and test them and whatnot. Why can't NBA players get back, you know, go to Orlando and start the process of getting ready next week? Like, why is there such, and I know there's some negotiation with money, and that's fair. We talked about that last week on the baseball side, but it feels like they're just dragging this thing out, where college football is like, and I know they're not playing for 3 more months, but they're like, all right, we'll just come back and start working out. Why can't the NBA do that sooner? Bring guys to Orlando, start working out and getting ready for this season.
All right, so we'll take a break and we'll come back and we will continue down this very pathway, because I think you made some adept points there. And I want to talk about how important it is to strike when you're the only game in town, and how the NHL seems to be doing exactly what I would be doing if I was the NHL in this situation. And we'll go into more of the details of why it looks like it's going to take so long to get basketball back, what Brian Windhorst and Ramona Shelburne and folks like that have written about. It sounds like it's going to take a monumental effort to make this thing work, which maybe we haven't thought all of this through, but it seems like it's forever. If they're saying basketball is not coming back until the end of July, folks, that's 2 months from now. That seems crazy, at least to us.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.